Your Honor, my name is Luther Snavely for Reza Tarian Associates. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Juan Romero. May it please the court. Romero is not inadmissible for falsely claiming to Nevada DMV in 2005 that he was born in Puerto Rico in order to obtain a Nevada ID. He's not inadmissible because U.S. citizenship was not a prerequisite to obtaining a Nevada ID card in 2005. In matter of Richmond, the BIA held that citizenship must objectively, actually affect or matter to the purpose or benefit sought, and equated affect or matter with U.S. citizenship being a prerequisite to the purpose or benefit in order for inadmissibility to be triggered. Here, all an applicant had to do in 2005 to get a Nevada ID was provide proof of name and age. Thus, even providing proof of U.S. citizenship would be insufficient unless that proof of citizenship included proof of name and age. Nevada DMV simply didn't care about U.S. citizenship independent of name and age. Even the BIA at page 5 of the record agreed that U.S. citizenship was not a prerequisite for a Nevada ID card. Therefore, Romero is not inadmissible, even if the court were to determine that his false claim of birthplace did constitute a false claim of U.S. citizenship. But he does not concede that his false claim of birthplace constituted a false claim of U.S. citizenship, pursuant to the plain language of the statute, the false citizenship statute in the INA. In my briefing, I cited to the Ninth Circuit cases of Caromi, Garcia Jr., and Smiley as support for Romero's position. However, it is true that the Ninth Circuit and the BIA in Valadez-Munoz and Bersenas-Barrera discounted my three cases because they are criminal cases with a higher burden of proof imposed on the government rather than the alien. But here in this case, the false representation that Romero made on his application is completely undisputed, as is his motive for doing so. And so what difference does the burden of proof make as to that claim on the application? His false claim of birthplace on his application for the Nevada ID either constitutes a false claim to U.S. citizenship or it doesn't as a matter of law. So I don't think that the reasoning in Valadez-Munoz and Bersenas-Barrero should be applied to this case.
Did the IJ also rely on the fact that it believed that Romero had filed a false CRBA, and isn't that enough apart from the DMV application? But there are credit the IJ's, you know, interpretation of, you know, what the DMV, you know, received.
Well, the issue there is, could a reasonable fact finder conclude that a CRBA was actually filed with DMV based on what's in the record of evidence? This is a phantom document. It's not in the record. No one involved in this case has ever seen it. The only reason it's a part of this case at all is because of a fragment reference in a one-page DMV memo, which does not identify the document, and in which the words citizen and or citizenship don't appear at all. All it says is report of birth abroad of U.S. document and then a number. That's it. There's no reference in the DMV memo. The reference in the DMV memo doesn't actually ever say that a U.S. citizen was born abroad. Nevada DMV turned over every document that Romero filed with them to USCIS, and yet somehow this document is missing.
The issue for your client, I guess, is the, you know, deferential standard of review we have. If the IJ concluded that the reference to report of birth abroad, the United States, abroad the U.S. meant a CRBA, and, you know, we're just looking for substantial evidence, I mean, isn't that enough?
I don't think so. Most of the time it would, but here that there's just nothing. Report of birth abroad of U.S. and a number could mean anything. Plus, there's no such thing as a CRBA for Puerto Rico. because everyone born there is a U.S. citizen. There's no U.S. embassy or consulate there to issue a document like this. pardon me. When Romero filed his application with DMV, DMV noted at the bottom of the application which documents Romero provided. That's a 216 and 220 of the record. There's no mention of the CRBA. Given all of that, I don't see how a reasonable fact finder could conclude that Romero filed a CRBA for Puerto Rico with DMV. And so there is not some substantial evidence to uphold a finding that a CRBA establishes a false claim of U.S. citizenship.
Counsel, can I ask about the standard in this case? The BIA suggested that the standard that was applicable, or I guess actually stated the standard that was applicable, was clearly beyond a doubt. You're contesting that, right? You're saying that he should have only been required to show a preponderance of the evidence, by a preponderance of the evidence.
That's right, Your Honor.
But or do we... how do you distinguish, or do you just say Lopez Vasquez got it wrong? Because Lopez Vasquez, I mean, it's an interesting case. You've got the judge, the panel seemingly agrees with you that it should be preponderance of the evidence, but then says that in our prior cases, we've held that it was clearly and beyond doubt. And so aren't we bound by Lopez Vasquez? As a three-judge panel here, aren't we bound by Lopez Vasquez, and we therefore have to apply, even if we disagreed with it, we would have to apply clearly and beyond doubt as the legal standard, and that is what the BIA applied here.
Well, first of all, the clearly and the burden of proof, I believe, would only apply to the CRBA. You know, the other two questions involved here, whether what he said constituted a false claim of U.S. citizenship and whether what he represented...
No, I understand you could... I mean, your point is you could win in the sense that we would have to, you know, grant the petition if we agreed with some of your preliminary arguments. But if we don't get there and we say, no, you know, that can be a violation, why, but the BIA applied the wrong legal standard, do we even have discretion? That's my question to you. Under Lopez Vasquez, can we even revisit that question? And because I think it's a problem. If you were right, say we agreed with the government on the rest of this case, if the BIA applied the wrong legal standard, we arguably might have to remand this to make sure. I mean, I think under administrative law, we can't just affirm on alternate grounds. We would have to actually remand and make sure that the BIA agrees that taking all the facts there, it still satisfies the lower standard. They've said you couldn't meet the higher standard, but they haven't said you couldn't meet the lower standard, and I don't think we can do that independently. But my fundamental question is, can we even go that route in light of Lopez Vasquez? Doesn't that just foreclose your argument?
Well, there has to be a way. I mean, if the ruling is clearly wrong on the law, there has to be and we all agree that it was wrong on the law, and that's wrong on the law.
Well, we'll hear from the government, but I'm not sure that that's right. I mean, I'll be interested in the government's response to that, but I hear them defending, in this case, a clearly beyond a doubt legal standard is the correct legal standard.
Well, the regular...
First of all, tell me why. Maybe you could just walk us through, to the extent you can, when we would apply... preponderance of evidence versus clearly beyond a doubt.
Clearly and beyond a doubt is applied to applicants for admission. Normally, that would be someone applying for admission at the border, or if someone entered the United States illegally and sought adjustment of status, that standard would be applied to someone applying for adjustment of status.
But your client, Romero had been admitted into the United States, so he was not. And that seems to be different than the Valdez, Munoz, and Blanco cases that Lopez Vasquez relied on.
That's correct, Your Honor. He was lawfully admitted, and then post lawful admission, he applied for adjustment of status. And once admitted, he's not admitted again when he's approved for adjustment of status. HCFR 1240.8D clearly provides that an applicant for adjustment of status is subject to the preponderance of the evidence standard. And so that's where this would apply.
So your point is that your case, in your view, is the exact same as Lopez Vasquez. Your client is seeking relief from removal. I mean, if we find that he, you know, otherwise was eligible for removal, meaning we reject your other arguments, your point is he's seeking relief from removal, and therefore, as Lopez Vasquez suggested, the relevant standard should be preponderance under Section 1240.8D. Is that a concise? Okay. Okay. Thank you. Do you want to reserve for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay. Perfect. Ms. Watson.
May it please the Court, Your Honors. Mr. Romero has not met his burden of showing that he's inadmissible, and he didn't meet his burden of showing that he did not make a false claim to citizenship. And as to the burden discussing, I mean, I can't say that, I mean, really under this evidence, he hasn't met it, whether it would have been under the preponderance or the clearly
okay,
beyond
so,
a doubt.
So and, I agree. I agree with that. The question is, under principles of administrative law, do we have the discretion to decide that? Because normally, if this were coming up to us on summary judgment and the district court applied the incorrect legal standard, you know, the burden of incorrect burden, we could say, presumably, hypothetically, we could say they erred on demanding such a high standard. But, you know, even if you applied the lower standard, we would affirm on alternate grounds. But I don't understand the court to have that discretion when it comes to administrative law principles. And so I'm a bit concerned that even if we agree with that, we might have to remand if we thought that the legal standard were incorrect. You could argue it's a futile remand, but I think technically we might have to if they didn't apply the correct legal standard.
I mean, they did here, and that's what we're arguing. But
so
I mean,
the government's position is clearly beyond a doubt is the correct legal standard here.
Yes, and that's what this court has applied. That's what the Supreme Court has alluded to. I mean,
I want to drill down on that because it's. I mean, this is a very to be. I found this to be a very confusing area of the law, trying to unravel it on when each standard does apply. I take it the government's position is, look, we need to go no further than Lopez Vasquez. Lopez Vasquez ultimately says that under Valdez Munoz and Blanco, the clearly and beyond doubt burden of proof is applicable in this context and seems to apply that burden of proof. Is that an accurate statement of what the government's position is?
Yes, but I also... discussed in the brief that the East Circuit Kirong was, while not binding precedent, of course, it's illustrative of the reasoning. He's put into 240 proceedings, and under Section 242 that talks about the burden, it says if the alien is an applicant for admission, then his burden is clearly beyond a doubt showing that he's entitled to be admitted and not admissible. And when somebody is applying for adjustment of status, they are treated the same. And I cited case law, and I have other cases that you're treated the same as somebody at the border. So that's where that clearly beyond a doubt comes in to admissibility, which.
So you wait, hold on. So your position is he was beyond the border. I think I'm missing link here.
When you adjust status, you have.
Oh, go ahead. Finish.
Pardon me. When you adjust status, a prerequisite. His adjustment application was pre-terminated. We didn't even get to the grace of the Attorney General granting the relief because he couldn't show that he was admissible to the United States because of this false claim to U.S. citizenship. So we couldn't get past that. And
well, hold
and
on a second. I would see your argument if he wasn't in the United States and they were saying, well, we're not going to admit you because of a false claim. But he was already in the United States.
Right, but somebody even adjusting in the United States is treated the same as somebody seeking the admission, and you have to show that you're not inadmissible. It's a requirement for adjustment, 245. You have to make an application for adjustment. You have to show you're eligible to receive a visa and that you're admissible and that the visa is immediately available. So that showing that you're proving that you're not inadmissible is a requirement for adjustment, and he couldn't get past that requirement. But I stress as well that the government is definitely relying on the fact that this court has repeatedly said that clearly beyond a doubt.
I want to drill down on that more, because if you go back to Lopez Vasquez, it says aliens who are seeking relief from removal by applying for adjustment of status must prove admissibility by a preponderance of the evidence, and it cites to the CFR section 1240.8D. So I don't know, that seems to contradict what you just said, because you're saying when you apply for an adjustment of status, you're treated as if you're outside of the United States, but that doesn't seem to be what the regulation says.
That's why I have cited case law that says that.
You're saying the Eighth Circuit said. You're saying that's
this court has said as well that an adjustment applicant is treated the same as somebody from outside of the U.S. coming in. And you still have that requirement of showing that you're not inadmissible. But moving on, and I would say that, I mean, the court could say that it doesn't matter, it doesn't necessarily have to make the finding, whether it's clearly beyond a doubt or preponderance of the evidence. If they found that under either standard, he still wouldn't meet his burden. But in moving
on... that's my concern, is I'm not sure we can do that, because we're limited to... when we're reviewing the petition, we're limited to the theory, you know, the theories that are put in by the BIA. And so if the BIA applied the wrong legal standard, I'm not sure we can do what you're suggesting, because we may agree with that. I mean, we get these cases all the time where we're like, boy, this would have been an easy one to resolve, but we can't do it on our own. We don't have plenary authority here. We're reviewing the BIA's decision, and if the BIA didn't state that reason, I mean, that's the question. Is there a kind of a harmless error exception in reviewing the BIA?
Or the futility, because if he doesn't meet the burden under either standard.
I hear you, and we struggle with that all the time. We remand a lot of cases that are futile, and we do it because the law demands it, you know?
So right.
That's what I'm struggling with.
Right. Moving on to the false claim to citizenship. You look at Richmond, you have to show the subjective intent to achieve the purpose or benefit, and the objective portion looks at whether the benefit was, whether the citizenship mattered to the benefit. And here, I mean, he wrote down his birth on the application for the identification as Puerto Rico. which conveys U.S. citizenship. I mean, he showed birth in 1980, and it's anything, I think, after the 1940s, you convey citizenship. So by stating that, and then the certificate of birth abroad, I mean, that was one of the documents listed at the Nevada DMV as one of the documents taken, and it is issued by the State Department when somebody's born abroad, and it is a little bit confusing as to how he was able to present that. But I really want to preface that this is his burden. He has to prove a negative. He has to prove he didn't do it. This isn't the government in a criminal case that has to show, you know, evidence, put in all of this evidence that he committed the crime. He has to show that he didn't. And he was provided an opportunity to inspect the documents, and true that that wasn't in the record, but it was identified by number in the memo. USCIS identified it by number also in the memo. So it exists, and it was his burden to show that that's not what he submitted. And he hasn't done that. And the board, as in a similar case where the person stated that they were born in Texas for a passport, you know, they said that that was claiming citizenship. And here, it did matter to the benefit sought. And if you look at the timeline of events, it's really, truly interesting that the NTA, when the NTA says that he entered the United States, he was admitted to the United States at the New York border in Champlain, New York on August 26, 2005. Yet, he applied for identification card on April 23rd, 2005, which was before he admitted and conceded that he had entered the country. And Nevada does not issue identification cards to people, even if he had been within status. He was on a B2 visa. And the Nevada statute states that they don't issue identification cards for people that are traveling on visitor visas. So he had no way of obtaining this card at the time he applied for it. So the citizenship, showing that he was a citizen by presenting a birth certificate of a citizen and stating birth in Puerto Rico, was the only way he was going to get this document. And again, I mean, this is his burden to prove that he didn't do it. And he has not submitted any evidence that this wasn't the document that I submitted, anything like that. And therefore, the agency properly determined that he made a false claim to citizenship for the benefit of an identification card, because it truly did matter in this instance. He had no other way of obtaining the card. So I'd ask that the court deny the petition for review.
Yeah. Unless there's further questions from the panel, I take it you rest on your briefs at this point.
I do, but I'm more than happy to answer any other questions the court has, or if you want a 28J on the applying, whether the court can address the issue of false claim without necessarily stating that clearly beyond a doubt versus preponderance. But again, the court's bound to follow its precedent, which clearly states clearly beyond a doubt is the proper burden in this case.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Snavely, you have some time for rebuttal.
Your Honor, Romero was in the U.S. lawfully at the time that he applied for the Nevada ID. He had a B-2 visitor visa, which was valid from August of 2001 to August of 2006. That's at page 123 of the record. Homeland Security stated that he was authorized to be in the U.S. until February 25th, 2006. That's at page 242. He applied for the Nevada ID in April of 2005. Under the Nevada regs at the time, he was eligible for the ID. So telling this lie about Puerto Rico was completely unnecessary. He just didn't know it. And by telling it, he got nothing that he wasn't already eligible for. The reg in question I provide at pages 12 and 13 of my reply brief. Your Honor, counsel mentioned the Carong case and asked the court to follow that. that is a definitely a minority position. There's the Negrete-Ramirez case out of this circuit, in which the court held that a post-lawful admission alien who was granted adjustment of status and a 212H waiver was not considered to be admitted again. At page 16 of my reply brief, I provide cases from the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 10th, and 11th circuits, which all agree with Negrete-Ramirez and this circus in this circuit and disagree with the position of the circuit court in Karam. The effect or matter standard that the BIA uses in Richmond does require that U.S. citizenship be a prerequisite for the benefit sought. The BIA doesn't use relevant to, it doesn't use materiality, even though it's used that standard in other cases. They use effect or matter for the only time that I'm aware of in Richmond. They compare two circuit court cases in which inadmissibility was triggered in one and not the other. They say that both circuit court cases were decided correctly, and that the difference between the two is that in one of them, U.S. citizenship was a prerequisite for the benefit sought, and in the other one, it was not. I think that prerequisite is a but-for test, but we really don't even get that far in this case because Nevada DMV didn't care whether Romero was a U.S. citizen and didn't ask him for proof of U.S. citizenship. For DMV, U.S. citizenship was just beside the point. Your Honors, do you have any additional questions for me?
Doesn't look like it, Counsel. If you're concluded, that's fine.
I'm concluded, Your Honor. Thank you so much. All of you have a good weekend.
Thank you. You as well. Thank you, Counsel, for both your arguments. In this case, we'll submit the Romero case, and we'll move on to our third case set for argument today, Gonzalez-Meja versus Garland, case number 17-71455.